Welcome. Please accept John and Jim's invitation to join them as they once again ask each other, what do you think about? Hey, Jim, you know, we've been talking about horror movies, and you know, the last one I talked about with you most recently was The Exorcist. And we did a little podcast on that about how it was based on a true story. And this kid had been actually exorcised, right? But tell me, what do you think about demonic possessions?
I think it's mostly a mental break or a, you know, mental health issue more than a biblical spiritual thing, because I've never seen one, so I don't know.
Right. But what if I didn't call it a demonic possession? What if we said it was a spirit possession? And what if we said then that it's, you know, shamanistic? And
you know, then I might even be more or less inclined to believe it, because then it just starts feeling too woo for me.
Yeah, a little new agey.
Yeah, I mean, sounds kind of stupid. I believe a demonic possession over a, you know, over a transient spirit takeover or whatever. But yeah, I don't know.
Well, because, you know, if we talk about this whole thing, then we really do need to stop and think about how does this all fit into the bigger picture? Because as Christians, we tend to think of demonic possessions or spirit possessions being the ones that are similar to the ones in the Christian Bible or the movie The Exorcist, right? Mm-hmm. Where there's a demon and it comes into a person's body and it has seized control. And usually through no fault of the person being possessed, although you'll find later that that's not the case. But sometimes that's a form of possession. But if you really look at it in the broader picture, then all kinds of traditions, all kinds of religious traditions around the world, probably 80% of the religions, some people say 74% is a number I've seen, believe in some form of spirit possession, right? These can be good spirits. They can be bad spirits. They can be foretelling spirits, you know, trying to get knowledge of the future, whatever it might be. But if you go looking into that notion of supernatural spiritual creatures taking over the body of a human being, whether permanently or temporarily, you know, that's open up for debate, but that's 75% of the religions in the world believe this, that this can happen.
Yeah, that's a lot.
It is. It happened, and it goes back thousands of years. You can go through Buddhism or Christianity or Hinduism. Islam has a kind of a version of it, depending on, you know, how you define what is a demon. And I think that a lot of the problem, too, is defining terms, because terms mean things. So, I mean, if we talk about Pentecostal Christians, they speak in tongues.
Yeah, I was speaking drunk Christian.
I understand. You know, those Pentecostals, they're talking to God when they speak in tongues.
Or speaking the language of heaven or whatever.
Exactly. Right. They don't speak a human tongue. They speak a spiritual tongue. And that's being done by the Holy Spirit who has possessed them.
Yeah. And I got a beef with that. Supposedly I had a great aunt who spoke in tongues one time at church, and it was all of this jibber jabber. It's like, what the fuck good is speaking in tongues if it's not a known language on your planet? You know, if you're just speaking whatever, you can't impart any holy word to anyone. You know, I always just, even as a kid, I just thought that's fucking stupid. You know, her version. Now, I mean, if she would have started speaking French or Swahili or something like that, it would, yeah, I would have been impressed. But, you know, just screaming out stuff like that, it's like, yeah, that's bullshit. Might be religious ecstasy, but I don't think it's speaking in tongues.
So I think we need to narrow this in a little bit, because this topic seriously can go on for hours and hours and hours. And I have read at least 4 books, watched countless documentaries, and it just gets very broad very quickly. But so what is a demon? If we talk about demonic possession, so we're not going to talk about things like spiritual possession, because those have implications of good spirits or friendly spirits. Could be your ancestors, could be nearby river, could be the east wind, whatever it is. We're not talking about those kind. Okay. We're going to talk about more of the traditional Christian demonic possession, where demons are adversarial to goodness, and demons are typically referred to as fallen angels. So, Jim, do you think we can interact with demons?
If they exist, I would say, yeah. Don't they have a sworn purpose to interact with us and try to pull us away from the good to the evil?
I don't know that that's their sworn purpose. If you go back to our earlier podcast we did about angels, it is very apparent that the Judeo-Christian traditions, including Islam, believe that men can interact with angels.
Yeah, and if you can interact with a good one, you surely can
interact with a bad one. So I think that makes perfect sense. Although demons would have to be definitionally, again, just like an angel, being a spiritual entity, right? They don't have corporeal bodies. So the way they interact with us is through what I would, lack of a better word, is going to call psychic means, right? Where they interact with your mind or your spirit, but not necessarily your bookcase. So as a non-physical entity, though, you can interact with them and they can interact with you. And in fact, you'll find that most demonic possessions are, depending on your faith background, in order to be possessed by a demon, you would have to do something that would cause the demon to be attracted to you and also be willing to allow it to happen. So playing with an Ouija board. I'm going to indict the Ouija board again, Jimmy. Or, you know, becoming a Wiccan or playing with black magics and things like this, right? All these sorts of things that tarot cards, you know, any of these kinds of devices open your quote unquote soul to being interacted with by demonic forces. Okay, that's the thinking. Now, the question is, at what point, you know, does it become a possession? So we talked about this with the one haunted house or the lady that claimed to be possessed, where we said it was an oppression. It turns out that there are actually three or four stages of demonic possessions based on who you speak to, you know, three or four, and right. How rigorous you are based on how you categorize things like, oh, this is the beginning. No, that's not the beginning. This was the beginning. But, you know, there has to be essentially three of them. There's an infestation, an oppression, and a full possession, right? These are not stages. It's not like I'm going to do this and then I'm going to do that. And then I'm going to do the next thing. It's more like these are the types of things that you can expect to have happen to you. Like you can have an infestation without an oppression. You can have an infestation without a possession. Infestation just means that you've invited the demon into the house or some material object that you have, like a car or whatever, and they won't leave.
Bastard.
Right. So now they've got a way to make you miserable, right? An oppression is when they are actively seeking to make you miserable, right?
And that's their job.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. An oppression typically is done as punitive, it seems to be. So if you're a particularly religious person, or you are a known to be devout, popular person or whatever, you can find yourself oppressed because you're just doing things the demon doesn't like. Okay. So they're trying to impart upon you a misery, if you will, like sort of like Job, right? Where he was just persecuted out the wazoo.
You're right. Yeah.
And then a full possession would be when the demon has sufficient power and hold to basically take control of your physical body without your awareness of it. Typically, and more often than not, the people being possessed claim no knowledge of what was happening during the possession. Okay. So it's a strange thing. Now, the problem is, of course, is how do you distinguish these kinds of things from mental illnesses? right? You know, the demon may withhold food when you're being possessed. That kind of looks like anorexia.
Right, right.
Or the demon may withhold sleep. So now it looks like insomnia. The demon may withhold happiness. So now you look like you're depressed. You may act like a completely different person when you're possessed. So now you look like you have schizophrenia, right? So all these sorts of things are possibilities. And, you know, so how do you determine that someone is possessed versus how people are just mentally ill?
Right. That is the rub right there. I mean, an intelligent demon in our society today would definitely pick one of our, you know, trending psychoses and hide behind it. Use it as a smokescreen to
mimic it, right?
Exactly.
So that's what the seems to be the modus operandi, right? To determine if someone is possessed or not, is they have to have multiple symptoms. And it's not just the presence of a symptom, give or take, even like if they have multiples. It's what the sum total of the presentation looks like with a little added dash of the supernatural. One of the things that people do when they're possessed is levitate. But is levitation by itself enough to say that person's possessed?
No, because like, you know, if there are fakirs and or however you say it, fakir, who say they can levitate, and other spiritualists, you know, and people in general, you know, who've said they've levitated. Yeah. So
there are documented cases of people levitating in the early 20th century. You know, there were lots of cases in the early spiritualistic areas, but there also have been recent ones in India and in Mongolia, where people have been documented to levitate, and people are just hand waving this as being magicians' tricks and things, because the notion that somebody really could levitate kind of breaks all of our physics. So it's a strange thing, right? So it's got to be fake. But so levitation, believe it or not, is not considered enough proof for possession. There has to be other symptoms too. Like one of the other things they look for is secret knowledge. Like, does the possessed person in their possessed state know something that they should not normally know? In other words, do they know how your mother died? Right. If you didn't tell them, they shouldn't know that, right? Or, you know, can they in fact move objects around the room without touching them? Right? Yeah. Poltergeist sort of activity.
Yeah. If I saw someone levitate, and there were instances of what is that called? Psychokinesis when you move mm-hmm. stuff?
Yep, psychokinesis.
Then I'd be willing to accept if they were puking pea soup and all that. Yeah, I'd accept definitely exorcism just on those sure. two things alone.
Sure. And, you know, the other symptoms are pretty classic in movies, right? They have an aversion to blessed objects holy objects in general.
That wouldn't hold water for me, though. I mean, anyone can cringe at the sight of a crucifix or a cross, and how many times have they used plain old water saying it's holy water and evoked a response? So
exactly.
Yeah, that would be one of, for me, would be one of the lesser proofs or whatever you want to call it.
There are also psychic visions. That's another one, like prophecy, right? The gift of prophecy is a symptom of a possession. Now, prophecy by itself is not, but you couple it with levitation and all these other sorts of things that go on, it's a problem. There's cryptophagia, which is where a person speaks a language that they don't know, right? There are many, many recorded accounts of people in the possessed state speaking Latin, or one was Bulgarian, believe it or not. All these sorts of languages that are either living or dead languages, doesn't really matter, but they speak them with fluency. So it's not like you're just repeating back what was said. You're having a conversation with someone, typically the exorcist, in a language that the ordinary person does not know. Ancient Greek, Latin, or in this particular instance, the exorcist was Bulgarian, and the demon was speaking to him in Bulgarian.
Yeah, that'd freak me out. Like, if I started speaking Bulgarian, something's up.
Yeah, exactly. Especially when, you know, this person was from Pennsylvania and didn't know Bulgarian. But these are the kinds of things they're looking for when they say that this person is possessed versus this person is just mentally ill, right? And I was shocked to find out how many exorcisms are performed in Italy every year. You have any idea?
It's thousands, I know, because I had read some of the books on the exorcist story too, but I can't
remember. It's a half million.
Oh, it's that high? But I'm not surprised by that, because Italy is the seat of the Catholic Church, the Roman Catholic Church, right? Mm-hmm. And I could see, I'm not disparaging anybody or their faith, but I could see people going overboard with it, you know, with it. Hey, it's in our country and it's in our, you know, this.
It's part of our culture.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, so I'm not so surprised. I'm surprised that the church authorized that many, but I'm not surprised that there are higher instances of religious fervor in Italy. Not saying anything good or bad about the Italians. It just doesn't shock me. I mean,
yeah, I understand. Here's an interesting thing to me, right? Was during the research for this whole thing, I started looking, and it's very interesting that in the entire Old Testament, there's only one reference to a demon and a demon interacting with people, right? And we get to the New Testament, and it's all over the place.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right?
It's all over Jesus.
Yeah.
All over the Gospels.
It's all over the Gospels. And the only reference in the Old Testament is 1 Samuel 16:14. Okay. And it's basically, let me set this up for you. Samuel went to Jesse and said, "Hey, where are your boys?" And he goes, "They're all here for dinner. Let's go eat." And he goes, "Well, isn't there another one?" And he goes, "Yeah, but he's out watching the sheep." And so Samuel says, no, go get him. And he goes and gets him, and his name is David, right? And God says, "This is David. This is going to be the guy that starts the whole thing. So bless him." But verse 14 says, in the King James Version anyway, "So Samuel rose up and went to Ramah," which is a place. "But the spirit of the Lord departed from Saul, and an evil spirit from the Lord troubled him."
From the Lord.
Yeah. So it's an angel that's evil. This is the only reference in all of the Old Testament that even indicates that you can interact with demons, except for the stories of Adam and Eve, right? Where they interact with the serpent, right? Which we've kind of bolted on over time to say that was Satan, right?
Right, yeah.
But there's no indication that that's Satan.
No.
So you can't count that.
You're right. That's an assumption that Christians have made over the years. Yeah.
Right. So we don't count that one. And you get to the New Testament and it's literally all over the place. Right. Have you read about the time Jesus cast out Legion?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Where did he put him?
And a bunch of plagues.
Right. There were so many demons inhabiting this poor man that was being possessed that they needed a herd of swine to hold them all. Does that make any sense?
No. Well, yes. I guess that it was pigs because Jews don't eat pork.
Mm-hmm.
So sending the evil spirits into the pigs, at least you're not destroying a food source for, you know, the local people.
Well, they all ran off a cliff and killed themselves.
And then they all ran off a cliff into the ocean, wasn't it?
Into the sea and drowned, right? Yeah. But this is mentioned in three of the Gospels. Yeah. This is in Matthew, Mark, and Luke. I mean, this story is legit, right? That Jesus did this. So, you know, that's cool. But the weird thing is even though we don't find any references in the Old Testament to demonic possessions, there are clearly implications that the Jews had dealt with demons. The Talmud is not really the Torah. It's more of a traditional backstory to Judaism, right? Like a collection of beliefs and these kinds of things. And I think a lot of the Kabbalah comes from the Talmud, but they have a hierarchy of demons in there. Like Asmodeus is listed as one of the big bad boys. And, you know, that's where we get that information from is the Talmud. So it's clearly that the Jews had some sort of a demonic taxonomy, but they didn't really put it into their holy bits. It was more like, and oh, by the way, this happens, right? Because in Matthew and Mark and Luke, right, Jesus drives a demon out of somebody who is mute. And restores their speech, right? And he's accused by the Septuagint of casting out demons by using the power of the devil, Beelzebub, right? And so it's clear that they thought that was possible. Right, because the other rabbis at the temple thought that that's what he was doing.
Right, they had the concept. Yeah,
they had the concept of it. Right, it's just very strange to me. So, if we go on to modern times and get away from the whole Bible and all that sort of thing, all the Christian faiths have it. All of Islam has it, although they don't really have demonic possession of people. They have demonic possession of things and places. Okay. Because jinn are co-created with people, right? Like, kind of like angels. You know, God created angels separate from man. Man is not an angel. Angel is not a man. Same thing with jinn. And they all talk about these things and make references to it all over the place. So nowadays, in modern Christianity anyway, it all gets hand-waved away and... You know, over the last 200 years with the beginning of Freud and psychotherapy as a real medical study, rather than just taking crazy people and throwing them in a building and saying they're crazy, right? Like an insane asylum. Trying to treat people has led to a branch of medicine that we call psychiatry, right? Those are medical doctors. They're not just psychologists, you know, psychology students. They're real honest to God doctors. And with the advent of that branch of medicine, more and more of this possession stuff seems to be mental illness, at least to our modern culture, right? But in 2007, the Catholic Church, I don't know how you would say it, as a reaction to needing more exorcists, right? They've been adding exorcists to deal with all the needed exorcisms. Okay. So they, in the U.S. now, they have sent at least one priest from every diocese to go become an exorcist. It used to be the case that there were four or five exorcists in the entire country. And now we have one per diocese. And they want to have two per diocese so that they can both be present during an exorcism. So what's driving this need for more exorcists?
People are getting crazier, I guess.
Possessed
more.
Well, their position seems to be that if we hand wave away all of this and say it's mental illness, right, then that's an opportunity for the demons to come forth and run rampant without fear of being exorcised because it's just a mental illness. Take this pill. No, don't take the pill. You'll be fine. Okay. So, you know, now you don't take your meds and there you go. So it's the strangest thing though. If you look in the Guardian newspaper, right, there was a story in 2015 where I got to reach at this line. This is just the greatest thing ever, right? Last year, the Christian think tank Theos reported that exorcisms were, quote, a booming industry in the UK, particularly among Pentecostal churches. Okay. They call them deliverance ministries. And the critics are saying that it's mostly LGBT people and those with mental health issues and things that are being targeted for these sorts of things, right? Because parents are making their children be exorcised. Now, in my personal opinion, that would be a form of abuse because it's almost like conversion therapy, right?
Right.
You know, you can't really do that. But check this quote out. The fight against the evil one started at the origin of the world and is destined to last until the end of the world, said Father Cesar Trugui, right? He's a Catholic priest. But today we are at a stage crucial in history. Many Christians no longer believe in the devil's existence. Few exorcists are appointed, and there are no more young priests willing to learn the doctrine and practice of liberation, which is what they call exorcisms, technically. They're called liberations. Okay. And this has been a wide phenomenon. So it's not only the Catholics ramping up, it's also Church of England, and it's also the Pentecostals. And since there's so much demand for exorcism, at least in the UK, there are now businesses springing up to do exorcisms that are not affiliated with any church. But they'll come and do exorcisms for 500 pounds a pop. I'm sorry, that's a euro. 500 euros a pop. They'll do exorcisms for 500 euros. That is a booming industry, right?
Crazy.
It is. So then I started reading a book by a guy named Richard Gallagher. And Richard Gallagher is a board-certified psychiatrist. He's a professor of psychiatry at New York Medical University and a psychoanalyst on the faculty of Columbia. Okay. He was board-certified, and he trained at the Yale School of Medicine. And his bona fides are seriously good. Okay. He wrote a book called Demonic Foes: My 25 Years as a Psychiatrist Investigating Possessions, Diabolic Attacks, and the Paranormal. And I've read this book twice now. And he goes on to detail how he has been brought in as an advisor on many of these demonic possessions, right, by various Catholic exorcists across the country. He's consulted on at least 2,000, and of those, he can say four, that's the number four, were legit what he believes demonic possessions. The others were just mental illness. Okay. But the church is bringing this guy in because they want to know, is it mental illness or is it actually a possession? Right. And his bona fides are seriously good, but he's been heavily criticized on the web and things for being not rigorous or whatever you want to say. Right. Because it's easy to sit behind a microphone like this or a keyboard and type a bunch of shit about somebody you've never met. But I kind of take the other approach. This guy wrote this book, Richard Gallagher, put his bona fides on the line, his academic credentials. He's on the faculty at Columbia. He teaches at Yale. He teaches at the New York University School of Medicine. And if they thought he was a crackpot, they'd fire him. Right. I mean, he has something to lose.
True. Yep.
Right. And he's going to lose his academic stature. But in the book, he says that there are many of his colleagues who deal with these issues all the time. And they just will not speak out because they don't want the repercussions. Right. But I wanted to go through two of the possessions that he mentions in the book. He's got five that he goes through. And, you ready for this one, Jimmy? This one bothered me.
Let her rip.
Okay. It's a girl that he referred to as Julia. Okay. And Julia was a satanic queen, as he puts it. Okay. She was a self-avowed high priestess and a satanic coven. She was brought in by another guy named David, who was the high priest. And she rose over 30 years. She started when she was 17. She rose over the 30 years to be their high priestess because she had the unique ability to get pregnant easily. Okay. And they had a guy in the coven who would perform abortions, and they would sacrifice these fetuses to Satan all the time. And in return, Satan was giving her power and material wealth. Okay. This one bothered me to read about. But the woman exhibited ESP type things, right? And then this is a very cool thing. So this doctor, Richard Gallagher, says that he calls the priest on the telephone to discuss Julia's case after he met with her, right? During the telephone call, they had a voice come onto the line saying, "Monkey priest, you fucking monkey priest, she's mine and you'll never have her." Now, you and I would say party line, but this isn't a party line. This was recent.
They don't have a recording of it though, right? I mean, it's just his word.
Yeah, it is. Yeah. Do you believe the guy or not? Right? Right? It goes back to your bona fides. Do you believe it or not? Is he credible or not? Well, they exercised, he says that they continued to exercise her for 14 or 15 times. She said that she wanted to leave the coven, but then she would say she didn't want to, that she was afraid to because they would kill her. And long story short, she wound up not being exercised and knowing that she was possessed and just accepting it and saying that there was nobody that could help her. But during the demonic possessions and stuff, she exhibited ESP sort of powers, like knowing personal details and hidden knowledge, right, of the priests and the doctor, and, you know, had the basic, you know, movie, this is my body, you can't have it, kind of thing, right? That happened a few times. But she also indicated that she couldn't remember anything that happened during the possession events, right? And she was worried that David was going to kill her because she was reaching that age. Remember, she started at 17 and she's now 40, where she was no longer being able to be pregnant. And so she could not be their queen mother, right? Because she couldn't breed anymore. So she thought they were going to sacrifice her to the whole thing. And it's really left as an open-ended thing because they lost contact with her and they don't know what happened to her. Okay. And then there's another lady named Catherine. This one's cool. She's an older woman, mid-60s, not particularly religious. And she had, during possession events, the demon would censor her seeing, her hearing, and her speech. Remember how you said that Robbie Mannheim wouldn't be allowed to say, the demons wouldn't depart until they allowed him to say a word, which they would never allow.
Right. Right.
Right. Do you remember the word?
God in Latin. So it's Deus. Is that what it was?
Deus. Yeah. And, but this lady, they would hand her pieces of paper and sometimes she could read them. Sometimes not. Sometimes she could hear what they were saying. Sometimes not. Sometimes she could speak and sometimes not, depending on whether the subject was about the exorcism or not. So they would ask her, are you ready to be exorcised? You know, are you ready to begin the ceremony? And she couldn't answer. They would ask her things. And then they got clever and they said, well, we'll write it back and forth, right? And so they would write it. And she would say, why are you handing me a blank piece of paper? Right? There's nothing on this. Those kinds of things. Now, like you say, this can all be faked, right? There's no proof of anything. But again, this woman then levitated for 35 minutes in presence of two priests, her husband, and this doctor, spoke in perfect ancient Greek, and told them that the demon told them that he would never let her go, and that she had sold her soul, and they were going to keep the bargain. And they were unable to exorcise the demon because she would go selectively blind, deaf, and dumb.
I wonder how she sold her soul. I mean, if she was not a particularly...
When she was a young woman, she wanted children and was barren. And in theory, she sold it because she wanted to be unbarren. Or, you know, have a kid or whatever. And this whole avenue of conversation, though, and... I mean, I could go on with this for hours, honest and goodness. And we can always say, I don't believe it because I wasn't there. I didn't see it. They didn't tape it. They didn't do any of this kind of stuff. I get that, right? But this Richard Gallagher guy is the only person, at least in the modern age that I know of, who has risked his bona fides to say, this is what I've observed. Now, he's not claiming in this book that he did any exorcisms. He says he was present. He says he has no explanation for this. It's not a mental illness that causes you to levitate. It's not a mental illness that causes you to speak ancient Greek. right? He says it's not mental illness. And he was not present in any successful exorcisms, right? Julia didn't succeed, and neither did Catherine. But yeah, it's definitely an interesting book. I'll loan it to you so you can read it. But the part that I wanted to talk about after this whole thing is really, there's a lot of these books and books you could check out, you know. There's a book called from Tracy Wilson called The Vatican's Exorcists, Driving Out the Devil in the 21st Century. There's a couple of papers published in Psychiatry, the journal Psychiatry, by M.G. Kenney, based on multiple personalities or spirit possessions. Which are they? I mean, people are doing scholarly work on these kinds of things, but it's not something that people want to talk about. And that's what I wanted to talk to you about was, you know, the implications for this sort of thing are scary as fuck. Right. And if you take the Bible as a literal Christian wants you to do, like they say, the Bible is the literal word of God, right? Then you have to literally understand that that means demons can possess your body against your will. Right? Because that's what Jesus was running around casting them out.
Yeah, if you subscribe to that.
If the Bible's the literal word.
Yeah, if you subscribe that it's the literal word, yeah.
And actually, it's not too ambiguous to say that it's in three of the Gospels. So some sort of exorcism event happened, right? But the notion that all of this is real, that let's look at, say, prophecy as a feature, right? How can you be prophetic if the future is not set? Right? The only way you can have prophecy is if you know exactly what's going to happen and how it's going to turn out and all that sort of stuff, which would mean that the future is set. From now to the future is not going to change. This event is going to happen. Or if you have, you know, the ability to levitate, what does that mean for physics? Right? What keeps you from zooming around the top of the planet? Because the world's rotating, you're levitating, nothing holding you to the ground. Why isn't the ground turning underneath you? Why aren't you zooming around like you're in a helicopter? Why aren't you banging into the wall?
You know the answer, right?
Well, I mean, what I think the answer is, but I'm okay. Only saying that, you know, if you think these things through, it gets pretty fucking weird, right?
Yeah. I guess I believe in kind of contradict. I guess I am a scientific religious person. I get, you know.
So, Church of Jesus Christ the Scientist?
Church of Jim, I guess. Because, I mean, I don't subscribe to the Bible being literal truth. I think, personally, I think that's hooey to believe that.
Well, especially when we've talked about it's a conglomeration of legend and
I mean,
different stories.
From other religions, you know, and I mean, people back then were just as creative and imaginative as we are today. So it's not, you know, like people say, well, how could they have written that? It's like, well, how does Stephen King write all of those books? How does...
yeah, that's right.
You know, I mean...
People have had dreams forever, right?
Exactly.
We always make that mistake of thinking that we're superior to ancient man. But I can tell you here and now, I wouldn't have a foggiest notion of how to build a pyramid.
Right, yeah.
They did it. And they did it more than once.
Yeah.
Yeah. And they did it in different parts of the world. They did it in Mexico. They did it in South America. They did it in Egypt. They've done it in Africa. There's, you know, there's all kinds of pyramids everywhere.
They did it in Las Vegas.
Heck yeah. Lit it up. But this whole demonic possession thing, if this guy's Richard Gallagher isn't pulling your leg, right? And I don't think he is, because I don't think he needs the money. And I don't think that he's standing to benefit in any way, shape, or form from having his reputation besmirched all over the internet. He's just claiming that essentially what he claims is that there's some weird shit going on and he can't explain it.
Right.
If you really want to boil it down.
Right. And the problem with it, as I see it, is that it's so easy to deflate,
because it is.
No one ever comes up with concrete evidence. Like,
well, the worst part is if you had video of this chick levitating, you know what they would say? Oh, you did that in After Effects.
Yeah, but I mean, couldn't someone study the film and actually
no
tell if it were?
No,
I bet an ex like a what do you call them?
It's all digital now, right? So, I mean, if the bits are there, the bits are there.
Yeah. And I mean,
but it's not like back in the days when we had film and you could see like they were different exposures or it was a double exposure and, you know, the grain doesn't match this way versus that way. So it's all digital. You know, even if I did it on my iPhone, it's still going to be digital.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, it's just, you know, I mean, it's just two kids saying,
it's exactly what it turns into,
you know.
And then they'll say shit like, you have to prove it. Well, I just tried to prove it to you. Yeah, but that was fake. Okay, well, now what? Now we're back to right? Because either you believe the person or you don't. That's really what it comes down to.
Right. Yeah.
So anyway, there's a mountain of stuff out there that looks fake as shit. Like if you want to go to Wikipedia or you want to go surfing around the web looking at demonic possessions and all this stuff, you'll find literally references to hundreds of events that basically don't pass my sniff test. Right. But it was this book by Richard Gallagher, Demonic Foes, that kind of creeped me out a little bit, not because I think it's real, but I do believe the contents of the book is real, if that makes sense. In other words, this guy wrote down these events. He's got five of them in here, and he talks about his bona fides, and he goes through his career, and he does all this stuff in this book. I mean, there's not just about, you know, ooh, spooky demons. It's a well-documented book. There's footnotes out the wazoo. There's all kinds of things going on in here that lend credibility to this book. And this makes me think that there is some weird shit going on that I can't explain.
What's the fifth story if he only encountered four?
No, he went to four exorcisms. The fifth one was an anecdotal story.
Oh, okay. Okay.
But he went to four exorcisms.
I thought you said earlier that there were four out of the 2,000 that he thought were legit. And I'm like,
The fifth one is discounted because it's anecdotal.
Yeah.
But
unless you're there, they're all anecdotal, you know?
Isn't everything anecdotal? Yeah. I mean, even the national news is anecdotal.
Yeah.
I mean, we really have to be careful in our society today to be cognizant of the source of the material.
Yeah.
And any hidden agenda. You know, and if you were Satan, I'm going to play devil's advocate for a second. Huh? Devil's advocate, get it. So wouldn't you try to make people think that all the demons running around having a good time and you're happy about it? Wouldn't you want them to think they're just crazy people and they're not demons?
Right. Yeah, that would be your cover, I guess.
Right. And wouldn't you want the national news to say things like, they didn't prove shit. We're not covering that story. Wouldn't you want nobody to believe what was going on, saying, now that's fake.
Right.
You know, in the meantime, you got a factory in China pumping out Ouija boards, converting teenagers over to your way of thinking, no matter what they do. I mean, that's what you would want.
Right. You'd be, yeah, hiding in plain sight, I guess.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. It's this notion that there's weird shit that we can't explain.
There's definitely weird shit we can't explain.
And that's my point. We don't know. But if I didn't know you firsthand, I wouldn't believe you.
Right. Yeah.
This whole subject of demonic possessions and things, though, is just fascinating and goes on and on and on. And I can't really do it justice in a half hour podcast. And I apologize if this feels meandering or ill thought out. I struggled to get this into a half an hour. And, you know, I hope it was entertaining and that we, you know, we'll just share our thoughts on the whole thing. Personally, I'm not convinced that it's real.
If there's a God, he's all powerful, all knowing, then why would he allow, you know, demons to exist? And everyone always says to me, oh, to test you. It's like, that's a shitty answer, because is he that insecure that he constantly needs to test these little minions that are so far below him, you know? So it always seemed to me a cop out for the human race to put blame on shit, you know? Oh, I didn't do that. I did that because this thing was in me, and I can't blame God for making me do something bad because he's good. So there had to be something else, you know. But then if they're real, I'm playing into their hand and thinking what they want me to think. So
I agree with you. And you're kind of left with Pascal's dilemma, right? Where Pascal was a French mathematician and his peers were making fun of him for being a devout Catholic. And he's like, well, you only have two choices. Either there is a God or there isn't a God. And if I'm wrong about there being a God, there's no harm done. But if you're wrong about there being a God, you're fucked. Right? Because you're going to go to hell. I don't know, man. I can't imagine that an organization like the Church of England or the Catholic Church would spend all this money to fly all these priests to Italy to train them in how to do the right if they didn't think they didn't need to.
Well, it's, but I guess if the church doesn't believe in it, then nobody's going to believe in it.
Well, I mean, why would you train them?
Yeah, well, I mean, if you're in the church,
you got to have a teacher, you have to have the classroom full of people. They need food and lodging and clothing for the week and a half that they're there or whatever. And I mean,
but if you're
you got to print little certificates,
you're part of the clergy. I mean, you've already drank that variety of Kool-Aid.
No, I agree with that. Absolutely.
And you know,
I mean, that is the very definition of preaching to the choir, right? Yeah.
So,
but why would they go through the expense of flying, you know, Joe Blow priest from Cincinnati to the Vatican for a certification that he doesn't need?
Well, because they believe it's necessary. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Right, why would they think that now they need it in every diocese? They need two in every diocese.
Well, because, the numbers are
going up,
but just because the numbers are going up don't mean that they're real possessions, you know? I mean,
I concur, right? Yeah. Is there a placebo effect maybe where people with mental illnesses get better after exorcisms because they believe they needed it. They got it.
I would think certainly. I would think certainly in some cases. And even like, you know, you mentioned the one where Jesus, you know, healed the blind, healed the deaf. What if those were just psychosomatic, you know, maladies, and they believed in him? So, you know, who knows? Who knows?
Yeah, I agree. I mean, who does know?
I guess you don't know until you've died.
That's when all the truth comes out, doesn't it?
Yeah. And then I can't tell you, because if you use a Ouija board, you're going to get possessed. So,
they were saying that was one of the spirits or the demon's favorite techniques was to impersonate a dead family member that contacts you via Ouija boards.
Yeah.
And then comes to you in dreams, a dead family member. And then you embrace it and bam, it's got you.
I never got the Ouija to work.
Yeah, well, I never did either because I just sat there because I was like, I am not going to subconsciously move this fucking thing. And it just sits there. So I don't believe. But there you have it. This is our conversation about demonic possessions. If you have anything to share further, Jim?
No, sir. Nope.
I didn't convince you.
No, I mean, believe whatever you believe. Do good in the world.
You do you, man.
Yeah. Just don't try to convert me.
What Do You Think About is co-written by John Gordos and Jim Dumermuth. Our theme music and suspense is provided by podsummit.com. Thanks to all of the listeners. Please take time to rate our podcast on your favorite listening platform, which includes the ability to do that on Spotify nowadays. So please do that when you're not listening to Neil Young. Drop us a line at wdouta@gmail.com or visit our Facebook page, anchor.fm/wdouta, for updates on releases. Copyright 2022 by John Gordos and Jim Dumermuth. Yeah, and see, this one's more like a Rogan-style thing, where it was just more extemporaneous, you know? I don't know. We'll see how it turns out. I'll edit it up, and we'll see what we get. Yeah. I had a hard time with this one, Jimmy. I really did. You know, I thought maybe I should just throw away all of it and just do a book report.